Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, before we get the show started, I wanted to let you know we're giving away a bunch of brand new Black Magic gear.
Yeah, cameras, switchers, DaVinci Resolve licenses, a bunch of awesome stuff. So stay tuned to learn how you can enter to win free gear from Black Magic, and we're going to tell you all about it later on in this episode. Now cue the music.
Hey, welcome to Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patron Kyle Hammond. I'm Matt Enlow.
And I'm Warren Kaplan, and today we have Don Sherrell on. He is a director that has done some of the best commercial campaigns on TV right now. He is most well-known for doing many, many Geico spots. And through our conversation, we found out that he does those commercials in a very non-traditional way.
Yeah. Really genuinely blew our minds in a way that we were not expecting. So, like, the surprise that you feel in the moment in the interview is 100% genuine.
Which is basically that Don also writes those commercials, and that is not a thing that ever happens in traditional TV commercials.
Yeah. Yeah, we're always wishing, God, I wish I could tweak things or, like, plus things, and sometimes we get to, but it's never from whole cloth that we get to originate the ideas.
Yeah. So not only is he directing Geico spots, which, you know, if you're not into commercials, I'm telling you right now, Geico makes the best spots in the world ever. He also is like a DP, and he did second unit on Resident Evil. He did second unit on Rambo. He shoots commercials for other directors, like giant directors. And he just has a real interesting path. From high school dropout to Oscar-winning director, DP, to Geico commercial director. He's kind of all over the place. And the kicker, he doesn't live in L.A. It's a real roller coaster of an interview.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Before we talk to Don, though, let's talk about our Patreon real quick.
Our Patreon, patreon.com/justshootitpod. You can get stickers. You can get inside info. Most importantly, you can get a Just Shoot It Pod hat.
Yeah. The hats have been going like hats.
How many do we have left?
It might be in the single digits. The Patreon, in case you're wondering, is just a way that you can just say, hey, I like this podcast. I tune in every week. It's helping me out with some things, and I want to help Matt and Oren pay the editors, pay for their fees and maybe throw more live events, which we are planning on doing soon.
Yeah. It's kind of like, if you think it's worth it to buy our editor for all of her hard work a coffee every month, just one, just a latte, she's behind you in line. You're like, hey, Jay, thanks so much. Enjoy a cappuccino. That's kind of the spirit of what we're trying to get out of the Patreon.
Cool. Well, let's get into the wild ride of Don Sherrell. Okay, we are here with Don Sherrell, straight out of Baltimore.
That's true.
And so I think we were talking before we started recording that you're one of our first guests. This is episode 170. One of our first guests that does not live in L.A.
The Delt guys being the main exception.
But that's a working, like, regularly working filmmaker.
You're working all the time, making a ton of stuff.
Yeah, I can't do the traffic. I can't do it. And I'm a bad hitchhiker. People see me. And they're like,
Baltimore.
Yeah, there's something about him.
Yeah, yeah.
There's an episode of CSI waiting to happen. I don't want to be a part of. I'm just trying to get to work. I don't need to pick this guy up.
So how often would you say you're at home versus traveling for work?
Well, I'm as home as often as I can be because I have four kids. And I blame my wife mainly for that because I couldn't do it by myself. But I'm home. It's usually a few week stint, mm-hmm. and then on the road for a week or two. I try to. Movies and commercials are very different things. Obviously, the process is very different. So, like commercials, if I'm DPing, if I'm just the cameraman on the gig, I can travel a lot less. If I'm directing, it's usually for 1 week of shooting, 3 weeks on the road.
Right.
Like that.
Yeah, you're stuck in meetings talking about what color the pillows are going to be and how great the shoot's going to be.
They don't even let me lie that much anymore. I try to do it like location scout, tech scout, shoot.
Like 3 days in a row?
No, like for every shoot week, initial location scout,
right?
Tech scout, shoot.
Yeah.
So like if we're shooting for a week, first thing we do is location scout. That's a week. Then I'm home.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Boy.
Got to select them.
Sure.
Right?
Wait, this is for commercials. How often are you shooting like for a week for commercials? Is that pretty often?
He's nodding his head. Yes. Wow.
A couple times a quarter, I guess. Twice a quarter or something like that.
Because are you shooting an entire campaign at once?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's usually campaigns.
Because these are mostly 30-second like broadcast spots, right?
Yeah. 30-second broadcast, and then you have your lifts, whatever they are. Depends on the buy. 6 second, 15s, 10s seem to have gone out the window, I guess. But yeah,
that's so funny because especially my travel jobs, we'd narrow things down remotely, and then I'd go scout like my favorite three or so
for initial location scout.
Initial location scout, and then the next day we would go with the tech scout.
The next day,
yeah.
I guess it depends on.
Yeah, the job. I mean, I think
how do you get permits?
That's a good question. Yeah. I think maybe they had already started to pull them in advance.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
It depends on where you're shooting to, right? You're talking about Ohio and
Places. Kentucky.
Now remember, here's the other thing too. I don't do the whole agency deal.
Oh, interesting. Wait, how do you mean? Yeah.
What does that mean?
I shoot directly for the brands.
That's a big difference.
Yeah.
Because there's no PPM. Like, there's no tap dance of, this. My joke about, the shoot's going to be so great.
Yeah.
There's a whole meeting for that.
Yeah, there's
that
no...
That you don't have to do.
Yeah, it's a different process.
Wait, who writes the script?
I do.
What? All the Geico spots? Mm-hmm. You write the
script? Well, not all of them, but the ones that I do, yeah.
Yeah, so hold on. But we really need to unpack this, because Orin and I walked in with a handful of assumptions. Having directed plenty of commercials... You are doing it in a totally different way than we are familiar with.
Well, Geico, arguably one of the top three brands for making famous commercials right now, right? And for the last 10 years or whatever.
Yeah.
You would assume that they would do it traditionally. Yeah.
Well, they're really great at a lot of things, obviously. And one of the things they are
saving
you
15% or more.
In just
15 minutes.
They are. They are 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. But one thing they're great at is, I think, dissecting the amount of marketing horsepower that an agency usually absorbs. I think they do it internally in such a massive way.
Right.
They're very in tune with exactly how the industry works and what the needs are. And they're a pretty ingenious brand. I mean, Warren Buffett, obviously, who owns Geico.
I did not realize that. No. Wow.
Yeah. I did not either.
God, I'm like...
yeah.
This is the part where I start going, oh, God, is this where I get, do I get in trouble?
You're like, these idiots don't know anything.
No.
What's
no,
a camera?
It's
I'm sure he's, on the cover of Forbes right now, saying, I'm a genius for having Geico, or, that's on us, is what I'm saying.
They have a great formula. They have a great formula, and I don't know how it works. Look, greater minds than I are behind the way that they sort of gain market share, and they do all the great things that they do. And when it comes to marketing and advertising, they are for a very specific reason, like America's sweetheart of a brand, because they are so in tune with how that works, how that system works. And then they, you know, I'm in a very privileged position to have worked for them for more than a decade, and shot for them and written for them. And I started writing radio campaigns for them a long time ago.
Wow.
And they're really brilliant at what they do. And it's a very freeing thing for someone who's a content creator like me, you know, and the team of people that we have. We're a fairly small team. I mean, there's not a, we're not a huge company. It's only 12 of us. And we are, you know, given the great luxury and the opportunity to write and create these campaigns that millions of people see.
Yeah.
And there's nothing illogical about it. It's very, it's very like.
Well, wait. So do they come to you with a brief and they say,
start us from the beginning.
We want to, you know, we have a new product, motorcycle insurance. And we want to get like the old guys that are just buying Harleys in the Midwest or whatever. Like,
yeah. When do they come to you and what do you know at that point, basically? Do they have a product and then they say, hey, Don, can you pitch? Or like, how does it work? Or can you not say?
I probably can't say all of the details about it. It's a multi-layered process that occurs. But I will say this. When they come to us with the task at hand, it's a very specifically well-designed bullseye for us to hit. And
gotcha. Like, for instance, it would be like, hey, we're targeting this demo and we want to incorporate these things, like sport, like broad generalities, like sports or food or something like that.
Yeah, certainly. And then from a production execution, that's sort of where they, you know, like for us to
then you're running,
pick up
it.
The ball and run with it or whatever.
But what about writing the actual script, like the creative? You do all comedy or mostly comedy?
I try to do mostly comedy. Sometimes it comes out like really intense.
You're always aiming for comedy.
I though. Always aim for comedy. Comedy's like, it's funny. It's like music, you know, it haunts you. Because once you're exposed to it, you chase it. Once you chase it, you try to get it. You don't. You wonder why. And it's this perpetual momentum that you're sort of like a slave to forever. At least that's how it works for me. You just want to make people laugh. And when you want to make people laugh, you don't stop. You don't stop because the room doesn't laugh anymore. Then you pick up a camera. You know, your joke doesn't land. You write new jokes. You know, you just, it haunts you. It propels whatever. The experience of first making people laugh will propel you to continue to make people laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
It's addictive.
Yeah, it is.
So, okay, so you come, so Geico comes to you and then you start pitching ideas, or are they like, hey, we want a man to karate chop some wood?
Or maybe does it make sense to even broaden it out a little bit, because you said you don't do the agency thing in general. Is that true? So it's not just Geico, it's kind of like...
We write the spots and we shoot and deliver the spots.
Yeah.
And I would say Geico's pretty much the agency.
Gotcha.
You know,
yeah, yeah.
In like sort of housing the,
like the media buy and all that stuff.
Well, yeah, that and then the deliverable list and the whole,
yeah,
the whole deal. You know, they sort of.
So it's a very holistic relationship. It sounds like you get to do you. You're just like, hey, here's, they cut you a check and then you come back with all the laundry list of things they asked for. Basically, or no?
Well, it's a little more like.
Like, are they on set at all?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. Have, yeah, like, no, they're totally involved. Yeah, stuff. It's okay. Totally collaborative. It's more, I guess the process would be like, they allow us to sort of walk hand in hand with them in developing the deliverables.
Gotcha.
And then we sort of wait for that design, right? We wait for what that, the parameter of deliverables might look like. And so, then we start scripting.
Interesting. So they're like, oh, we kind of have a hunch that we're going to need X number of cut downs and like X number of spots.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're pretty specific. I mean, they're pretty buttoned up. There's very little. I will say this. They're very good designers and they leave us very little room to screw up, and if we do, we're fired.
Gotcha.
So, you know, they're smart people. I mean, these are brilliant people that really leave the heavy lifting to us in our category, mm-hmm. and then they do the heavy lifting in their category, which is a, it takes a massive amount of burden mm-hmm. off of us so that we really can focus on creative and production and really getting mm-hmm. the idea executed properly to the right. audience, you know, and it's great because they happen to be the one in a million, I hate to say client, but they are, you
sure,
know,
yeah.
Partner. I like to say we're partners. They happen to be the one in a million partner that their trajectory aligns with ours, and their trajectory, you know, is grounded in their fundamentals, and then our roots are in a complementary mm-hmm. industry that they sort of align.
Yeah,
it's well, like whoa.
Let's talk you know, about when does roots, that happen? Actually.
Because I'm curious, right? Because I think plenty of our listeners at home, maybe they live in Baltimore, maybe they live in Michigan, maybe they live in Chicago, who knows? They're mm-hmm. all over the country, all yeah. over the world. And they're all like, oh man, Don figured it out, right? Like how did you, so you said you started writing radio spots with them. Was that the way that you kind of began your career in advertising with all of these brands or how did it happen?
I'd rather be lucky than smart. And I was more lucky than smart. And that's the truth of it, honestly. I was working in recording studios. I mean, I dropped out of high school and I was like, wanted to be a musician, thought I would be a music producer. And realized very quickly at the, this was the late 90s, that that was not really an industry that was a feasible thing.
Sure.
So I started working in recording studios. And by that, I mean like, hey, you guys hiring? No, we're not. Well, how do I like work here? Well, pay, you know, $18,000-$20,000 for our 16-week course, and you could be an intern. I'm like,
sure.
Well, only the one issue there, don't have the 18 grand.
Yeah.
So, you know, what I mean, and literally there was somebody cleaning the bathrooms, and I was like, can I clean the bathrooms? How much are you going to charge for that? And I'm like, I'll do it for free. I'll clean the bathrooms. Just
yeah, let me
just teach
out.
Me how.
Yeah,
to do that.
I just want to learn. I just yeah, yeah. want to learn. Like I want to know what all those knobs do on the console.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that to me was like the path to music.
Yeah,
and that was it. That's all I saw. Well, that was also the wrong trajectory. But you know, I learned to clean a hell of a bathroom. I'll tell you that. And that was. I learned how much vinegar was appropriate to mix with water and how much bleach you actually use. And, you know, I even folded the toilet paper in the triangle. But
very
then
classy,
I.
Very classy.
Yeah, thank you. But then I really did get exposure to the proper recording techniques.
When did you pick up a camera? Right? You're an audio guy.
So.
Right? You've got that technical knowledge.
Yeah. I was mixing, I was doing post production for shows, Discovery Channel.
Mm-hmm.
Just audio or
yeah.
everything?
Yeah, just the audio. And I would mix this show. It was like a medical show. Mixing that and watching the visuals, I'm like, huh. And because I would see it pre-color corrected.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would see it come back color corrected. And I'm like, well, I have to mix it right in the first stop. You know, uh-huh. I have to like get it right out of the gate.
Sure, sure.
They can shoot it and push this much. And then that's what started like my head going, you
right.
know, wait a minute.
So you saw behind the curtain a little bit.
Totally.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally. And so I started from the beginning all over again, you know, and I'm like,
you clean
I can
the bathrooms
do on-set audio.
At the Discovery Show.
They wouldn't hire me. I
so you did production on you.
I begged to get on set, and I boom operator.
Yeah.
I feel like your story is already so inspiring because like most people that we have here that just had a movie at Sundance or something, their first film or something.
Oh, they rejected.
They went to AFI.
Well.
They went to this. They have went to Harvard. Then yeah. they did this film school and this. And you're like, we've never had a bathroom cleaner / boom op that is directing like the biggest campaigns in the nation.
Yeah, the biggest in the world.
And writing them too.
I'll double down on boom opping. It is the best. Maybe Scripty gets it. You're tied for Scripty in terms of just like being aware of what's happening on set, right? And being able to kind of observe and see what you want to do. Like, you can steal the little tricks from the director. You hear all the directing, you know all of the things that are happening, but you also are just responsible for your own department. So it's a sweet gig if you want to like
learn how to
direct. Yeah, without it being like a huge impact, you know, like that's a great entry point in that we don't really talk about very much on the show.
Well, I always think there's like, if there's a closed set, who do you keep? The director, cam operator, and the boom op.
Yeah, and you hear everything. You know what I mean? You hear, like, those laughs are hot when the director's like, ah, oh, do it this way. And then you see the results directly, you know?
You're closer to the actors than, like, anyone else on set or their shoes or whatever you happen to be recording.
Yeah.
Wait, so how do you jump from boom op to director?
Well, the director is the least qualified job on the whole set, you know?
Sure.
You can have very little technical expertise and make your way onto a set. And that's not to say that's how everyone does it. But I didn't do it that way. But, you know, the term director, it took me a long time to realize how much weight that carried. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand, like, why that was a big thing. Because if we got to pop the dolly onto the track, and I know I got 4 grips on the job, and one of the grips is overdoing something else, grabbing something from the truck, mm-hmm. another 8 feet of track or 10 feet of track or whatever we need, I'm jumping in there to pop the dolly on, because that was my job for a long time.
Right, right.
And, you know, running cable was my job for a long time. So
when you do that, people freak out a little bit.
Well, I shoot with the same crew pretty much, so they're totally used to it. Everybody's cool, like, let him do his thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's a nut. Just because
sometimes
him do his thing.
I'll do that stuff, and I'll get one of two things. I'll get like people rolling their eyes, like, "All right, Manlow, that's fine. We know you're one
of
the guys
trying to prove it."
Yeah. Or like, "Oh, you're kind of making us look bad." Like,
it's like more of the shame thing. Like, we can do this.
We've got it. Like, you don't need to help us out. We have the right number of people to do this job. Like, you're insinuating something by helping out.
We don't come in and, like, tell the actors what to do.
Yeah, right?
Why are you coming in?
Maybe that's how they feel about me. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, but if they're your team, you know, if you're with them all the time, then they it's a different deal.
So, okay. So, directing came from, I was doing radio campaigns. And then when you direct radio campaigns, it was a very unique experience because I went from an audio engineer to then being in charge of a story. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I would write it. Sometimes other people would bring it to me. And I would just close my eyes and listen. And I would hear the picture. Mm-hmm. You know, the picture has to live in your mind. I mean, you guys are directors. You know it. It's like, if you can't close your eye, I heard your podcast about a feature that you're going to shoot in Puerto Rico, and you said, I had some notes about it, and the deaths were awesome, but the relationships, they needed some work. And it's because you had to have closed your eyes and pictured the movie the way that you knew you'd have to live with it in the edit room. And you pictured it, and you were like, yeah, I got some stuff I want to change about it, you know, because that's your vision.
Yeah, well, to me, the mark of like a good script, whether you're a director or not, if when you read it, you're picturing in it, not because the scene description is good, just because the flow makes sense in your brain, then it's real easy to shoot. But when you're like, wait, why would she say that? Why would she do that? I thought their relationship was like this based on the previous scene. Now it's weird. Like, I thought she, like, I pictured her as this angry character.
It
now
distorts
all of a sudden,
your understanding of the character.
But
the
when
flow.
It's written well and the story is flowing, it all, like, you're like, yeah, of course she'd be standing by the window, you know? Mm-hmm. She loves light. She hates vampires.
She
whatever,
loves windows. Know? Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So, right. Yeah, just like you're saying.
When you picture it in your mind, when you open your eyes, that's when you have to fight every obstacle. Mm-hmm. Budget. Sure. Producers. Sure. Studios.
Yeah,
whoever. Funding. Whatever it is. Schedules. Yeah, all the stuff. I think I did a horrible job saying where I went from radio to director.
So no, you said you had to think about story for the first time.
Story,
when you were directing,
yeah, story. Directing radio is tough. So then you hear the whole thing, and all you have to supplement it is Foley and sound effects. Against,
yeah, you're like, I can't use another fart sound here.
Well, if it was up to me, you can't have too many.
Dude, that's a very funny and very classy fart. When was the first time you stepped on set as director? What was that job like?
It was a HVAC energy company.
Gotcha. So like a local deal. Spot.
Yeah, regional.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
And I lost so much money on that job, but I wanted it to look great. So, okay, this is interesting.
Yeah, this
I haven't
great.
Thought
this
about this for a while. Okay, so it was like the first gig, and I just wanted it to, you know, I just wanted to blow everybody's minds, you know.
So you're the production company, and you're like, hey, we're going to do the job, and I'm going to direct it.
So they're like, we want to do these TV spots. Mm-hmm. I was like, all right, cool. I'm like, yeah, we want to do 30-second spots and radio.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yeah, yeah.
So I'm like, okay, cool. Like, we need one spot about heating and one spot about air conditioning. So I came up with this idea. I was like, well, we'll build a kitchen. Mm-hmm. I knew a guy that renovated kitchens. And I was like, hey, man, I remember you saying you, like, had extra kitchens, mm-hmm. right? Like, you would pull, like, yeah. crappy kitchens
right.
out of a house. Like, how much would it cost, like, instead of just taking it to the dump to, like, rebuild that kitchen? He's like, I don't know, man. It might be like $1,000. I was like, okay, cool. And my father-in-law still owns an ice company. So I was like, if we wanted to like freeze everything, he's like, oh, man, no problem. I'll do it for you. No problem.
Sure.
So we froze everything. Like I made it this whole ice. So I rebuilt this kitchen and then I froze all of it. Like all the pieces, because he had this big warehouse, an industrial.
So did
like,
you
ice
hold
house.
On?
Did you pour water on top of it?
Okay,
you have to mist it with a fan and freeze it slowly. It took me a week to freeze everything.
Wait, so
and then I brought it. I rented this warehouse in the back of the church. Uh-huh. This church, right, and brought each piece in frozen, and then I had this gag where I wanted the.
Wait, how did
I
you wanted, keep it cold in the church? Was it winter?
It was no. I brought it in just to shoot it, and then it was all done. And then once it melted, it wilted.
So
it was over.
Literally, your set is melting as you're assembling it.
Yeah.
Hopefully, you're not using like 18 Ks right next to the kitchen.
Yeah. Right.
No, I didn't have big lights on it. I had small spots. So I wanted the dog to be frozen. Now this is I have no idea about animal.
Sure.
Like any of it. I'm just like, I'm a kid, I don't know. So I went to these taxidermy shops, okay, and I found a fox.
Right.
I found a fox. And I got a fox for like $150. And I was like, if I put a collar, like with a tag on the fox, and I drip that thing with ice, who's going to know it's not a dog?
Right.
Right? And if I have a cute little kid petting the fox, you're going to think it's a dog. So that's what we did. And so I had to like go to the taxidermy.
Did it work? I don't know why it's so funny to me.
But. Yeah, it worked. It looked like a dog. But so I went. So I go to my father-in-law and I'm like, hey, man, we got to freeze this fox. Now, he used to be in production many years before he, so he was like, yeah, man, let's do it. I mean, he was all on board.
Yeah,
he was
gets
all on board.
It. He gets
He supplied
it.
Good, all the good. Ice for Ladder 49.
Cool.
Shot
awesome.
In Baltimore, yeah. So he's like, he's been a big supporter of mine for a long time. He's a really good guy. And so got the fox from the taxidermy place. Thing I found out is for icicles to drip off of something, you have to freeze it slowly over time. Mm-hmm. If you just like flash freeze something, it won't work.
Right.
So the water has to like
you want it
to make
look.
The
yeah yeah
yeah
right, the icicles
stalag
yeah, yeah
tight white whatever it's called I don't know
yeah yeah
so that's what we did.
So you were just slowly building your reel with regional commercials and your own company, and then
yeah, I never thought about it like building a reel or anything like that. It was like, what's the next gig? Directing, walking on the set the first time, that was like the first gig, and I think it taught me how to produce at the same time,
mm-hmm.
which was, you better have all of your solutions well before you walk on the day. You know, to me, you know, in my process, I don't solely focus on actors and performance. I forget who it was. I want to say Hitchcock. I'm probably wrong. I can't remember whose quote it was, but 90% of directing is casting.
Sure.
Yeah. Right.
You want to have the environment there for people to, I think Rick Rubin is such a great producer in this way. He creates the environment for art to flow. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, we want the storm system to occur. We're bringing the bottles. Let's capture the lightning. To me, that's my approach to directing. It's like, I'm not gonna tell you
like how to say this in a funny way.
How to fart right. funny.
How to fart funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
You better know. You yeah. better know that you're this
like, here's the
like
beans.
That's kind of funny, yeah, but yeah. this is way funnier. Like that's funnier.
It is genuinely much funnier.
It's much funnier. And so
and you're hoping that the people you bring on are funnier than you in that
absolutely.
Particular,
yeah, you, way. They have to out-act me because I'm a hack. So they better, when it comes to acting, they have to. They have to. They must. I mean, that's the gig.
Well, so let me, I want to ask, I mean, because we're kind of running out of time a little bit, but your stuff is so, the Geico stuff you've done, which is the stuff I'm most familiar of yours with, is mm-hmm. just so funny. What are your tips in casting? And I'm also interested in locations, like what you look for in a location.
I go really deep into the locations, and I have a great location manager. She's the greatest location manager and scout. And here's the reason. We agree, and my whole crew, we all agree on very basic core fundamentals, which are, it starts with the story. Mm-hmm. It starts with the creative. And then the location is the story. That's the deal. You can't fake that part of it. Like, so how much of it can you not fake? Mm-hmm. Because we know we have to fake so much. And then actors respond to an environment where they're free to do their thing. They want to sing, man. They want to sing. They don't want to be told how to sing. They want to sing. If you can build an environment where they are free to feel like they can sing mm-hmm. and hit a wrong note and then course correct, that's way better than me coming in, interrupting their flow and saying, hey, man, you were off by half step.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. I sometimes like to say, let's make some mistakes.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
So do you find that when you're in a casting session, like, are you still, because I think, you know, we've been overruled every once in a while against our best instincts, you
sure.
know, like, yeah. like, do you find that you're still kind of battling people in terms of who you think is right, or how does that work for you? Or do they are they like, well, done?
Well,
what's up? It's good.
Well, you know what? Look, I go for it. I go for it 100%, and I'm not always right. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the funniest thing is going to be if you play the scene like this. And then there's someone
the audition, you're saying?
Yeah, in the callback, yeah. And then the actor might say, well, I kind of thought the character is maybe not so dominant. You know, maybe they're subordinate in this way, but they're sort of, you know, surreptitiously saying mm-hmm. XYZ. Or there's someone, you know, on the couch on our side who's saying, why don't you have them try it like this? Mm-hmm. After I do my 100% go for it, I want that feedback. I do. I think the important part is having the right people in the room behind the camera and in front of the camera in the casting, because when you get on the set, it's done.
Sure. Yeah.
So, yeah, I totally have been upended, but to my delight.
Okay. I will say, I feel like in most situations when I'm, like, fighting really hard for an actor, when I'm like, I like this person, they're like, well, we don't really like this because this and this and this, unless they're reason is like, well, we need to balance the diversity or whatever, some real technical reason. If it's just like,
yeah, we've got two blondes and we need a redhead, yeah, or something. Yeah.
But when I find that when I fight really, really hard for something, that that I usually get like what I want. But a lot of times I'm afraid to fight. Like, I'm like, well, if all these three agency folks don't get what I get from this person, maybe I'm wrong, you know?
Yeah.
And that's when I feel like things...
It's good. Yeah. I mean, think about it, because we're asking our actors to be that vulnerable.
Right.
Sure. We can't be exempt.
Right? So I'll do... This is my move, Don.
Okay.
Specifically with casting. Because the thing that I'm oftentimes fighting against is that 9 times out of 10, the client mostly, but the agency a little bit as well, they'll go hard on the on how attractive someone is. Like, if I have to choose between someone who's funny and somebody who's great looking, they'll always lean towards the great looking person. And my move in that circumstance is always
that's
like,
why I'll always get hired. So, you know.
There you go. Yeah.
Not easy for us.
Yeah, sure.
Not easy. I'll being like, handsome.
Being so, just so good looking.
Curse I was born with.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and they'll always say, like, we want real looking
they'll
people.
They want real people, real models is what they mean.
They're like, oh, she looks real. She's got freckles. She is a supermodel. Yeah. With freckles.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a, like an 18 and 1 day year old.
Right. Let's hire somebody with freckles. An extra thumb.
Yeah, yeah. But I'll go... yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting choice. I think if you want to go with something like a little more like CW kind of like heightened sort of like model-esque, like, you know, like a CW sort of show, I think that's a really cool way to go.
And they're like, I was thinking
a little more grounded. Yeah, yeah. And sometimes it has backfired on me a couple times, but for the most part, they know that that's a dig. That,
now,
that's
you guys, you use casting directors, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, every once in a while, I'll bring in a few ringers. I'll be like, hey,
right.
Bring these guys in, please.
I mean, my casting directors are, like, awesome. I'll give them a plug, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Dowd Roman. They're awesome.
Yeah, yeah. They're out here, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Same cattle call spot.
That's where you were coming from, too, right? Yeah, yeah. Cool.
And they're awesome. And
were
they
you doing
also,
Geico today?
No, not today. Okay. But these guys, he'll walk in the room, mm-hmm. and he knows all of them. You know, Roman knows all of them.
The casting director knows all the actors.
Oh, yeah, totally. He walks in, and he'll just go, and then walk out. So it's just a quick, oh, it's you. Quick head shake, no, and then out. If he doesn't come in, he's leaving it up to you.
Oh, interesting.
Wait, but they've already done a preliminary.
Cast someone?
Huh?
He's telling you not to cast someone?
Like, they're just not nailing.
They're not hitting the mark.
They're not hitting it. Yeah. They're just not hitting it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did I just reveal the whole thing?
No.
Do you
I love
cast
it.
Out of 200 South?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that I just, my last thing Wait. I cast out of there.
200 South is
next to the Petco.
La Brea.
Yeah. I call it the Petco auditions. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've never cast out of there, but my wife is an actor, and she'll go in there all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so they have this really nice setup where the casting director is outside the room watching the audition on camera.
Oh,
right?
I see.
Because a lot of times they don't do that.
And they've already, you know, my process, they do all of the prelim stuff.
Mm-hmm. Including the call down to who's you're calling back, or do you choose the callbacks?
I choose the callbacks, but...
Just off tape, right?
Yeah. So, like... For each role, I try to keep it to 10 or 12, you know.
Gotcha. Yeah. So it's not super hefty then. That's a, like, depending
I mean,
on how many
see
spots.
20 or 30.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but that's 10 per role.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. So, that's still a long day. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes two days.
Man, casting is the...
One time I had to populate a whole town up in Pacoima. A whole town.
Right, all with featured people. Not
oh
extras.
My god, yeah. When I did the Money Man stuff, I don't know if you ever saw it, where the guy was covered with money on the motorcycle.
Oh wait, I have seen those spots. Yeah, yeah,
that was mine, and we had to literally populate a town. I mean, it was hundreds and hundreds of people,
and you couldn't just do extras.
No, because they all had to have a California motorcycle license.
Oh.
Hello. Should have seen that one.
hey, here it is, man. It's legit. It's looks like it's temporary, but it's pretty much legit.
Wait, so when we, so when you're looking at actors and casting, what's the, like, do you, you just watch them do the material? Like,
just
is there any?
Well, remember, basically. I've written the scripts, so
right, right.
I'm, or, and it's not just me. There's two other writers. So, and we were writing today. We were writing a new campaign for somebody else, and so we have an idea in our minds, and then the actors come in, and we see the words acted out, and we have that moment of truth where it's like, we wrote a turd.
Yeah, sure.
Wait,
yeah,
does
is
that
this
happen
bad or the
between
bad?
The original audition and the callback? Do you change the script a lot when you see people?
No,
reading?
Only the callback. I mean, you, no, it's the callback, yeah. Because you have so many bad, so many bad,
bad actors.
Yeah, just or whatever, the delivery is not right or whatever it is, you know, because you want a portion of it to be interpreted, but at least seeing the more focused performance, that's when you really have the moment of realization to say, ah, we shouldn't have wrote it down like that. Right. We shouldn't have wrote it down like that. And then we change it because the sentiment is there, obviously. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that's what we're preserving. You know, we're preserving ideas. We happen to have the luxury of a lot of times, not all the time, but a lot of times we're sort of crafting the script so that the essence of the idea is preserved, even mm-hmm. though the syntax changes or
sure.
the language changes, the grammar.
Or...
Yeah, and then you yeah. see the character bring something totally new to it. And a lot of times we go, oh, man, that's right on.
Mm-hmm. Right. That we're going to so take your idea, give it to this other actor.
That happens too.
Sure.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah, it's rough. How do you deal with that, actually? Like what do
we
you...
We just do it.
Yeah. Yeah, if it's something right and, you know, just kind of shakes out in the end.
I mean, we just do it because a lot of times it's, that's the idea we thought would be good, but we mm-hmm. didn't write it that way. And that, you know, so
like, we were getting at this and you said it right. Yeah.
Yeah, and
do you, what's your deal on like pantomiming during auditions? Are you against it, for it? Do you care?
I like for them to rehearse things as scripted. Then they come in. Depending on what they do, it's a tolerable thing, mm-hmm. you know, but I really do wait, I'll do this a lot of times, you know, to perhaps the mystery of a lot of actors. I'll say, you know, do it again, but I'd like to see it slower.
Slower,
always
blowing my mind. I've only said faster ever. Like I
that's,
never say
that's
slower.
That's where you're gonna get to.
But he's doing a lot of 30-second commercials too. Which,
yeah, sure.
Yeah, but
like
but
when you're doing like a 5-minute scene,
yeah.
Because here's the thing about slower. They'll find their beats. Mm-hmm. You tighten their beats. Mm-hmm. You know? You tighten the beats.
Don, that is a A+ tip, man. That
yeah.
is so good.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, wait, slow it down. Look, that's when you, if you want to learn how to play the banjo, listen to a great like Flatten Scruggs
like
recording.
Steve Martin.
He is a good banjo player. I mean, there are great banjo sure. players, and then there's Steve Martin.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. yeah. yeah he
but
hired all
wanna,
of them to back him up.
If you want, okay, so he probably has listened to a Bela Fleck record mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. slowed it down to half speed.
Yeah.
And that's how you find your beat. So when you hear bing ding 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 ding, what you're really hearing is that person's rehearsal of a bing ding diddly ling ding 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 diddly ling ding ding. So that's what I like to do with actors. I like to say,
yeah.
let's find what you're latching onto and let's slow it down. Cool. We don't have to make the time right now. We got this is the time to tighten it. And then you see the performance. And then that's really when you can tell if your jokes are working or you're...
That's so interesting, man. That's so good. Because I feel like... I don't want to speak for other people, but like so often I think we're thinking of like, how do you get it all in there? You know what I mean? Like, oh, I've been given a script that's I know is too long, right? Like that's really should be 45 seconds and they want it to be a 30, right? And so I'm like, can I find someone who can just cram it all in there and make it work right, somehow?
Micro machines it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, think about what you're doing. You're boiling down the essence of an idea. So you as the director have to decide what's the idea. And if there's two, right? If there's some compound that exists, which darling do you kill?
Mm-hmm.
Sophie's Choice.
You know, that is right. That's so funny though, because I'm reminded that because you've written the spots, you have more latitude than we do.
I mean, I've never worked on a 30 that's not too long. I don't think.
Right? Like it's
oh, see, man, your stuff like, oh, should be coming in. Like, okay, so here's
six
a good
jokes, and it's I don't like, know. We just have time for one.
I don't
one
know
if, and a tag.
I don't know if agency people listen to this or not, but
some do.
Yeah,
the smart ones.
We've actually both gotten jobs from agency people.
Okay, here's the deal: hire these two guys, but write the scripts at 18 seconds.
Yeah, yeah,
18 seconds.
18.
Wow, so boom. Almost half.
Yeah.
For a 30 with 18 a 6-second end card.
18 seconds of meat. They it's won't the, write it under.
It will never happen. No, I know. I know.
Like, they're shooting for 30. They write for 45. So yeah. Have them shoot for 18.
I mean, I think the move now on 10:07 p.m. on Monday, June 17th, is I can, from now on, I can be like, look, the guy that does the Geico spots told me.
Yeah.
18 seconds.
You remember when that dog was eating in slow motion? Not slow motion, but like everyone's frozen.
Yeah. If you like, it was a fox. If you like, if you like Geico commercials, then do it. If not, don't worry about it. Just write your 45 second commercial that will squeeze to 30, and then you'll tell me there's a 12 second end card.
I love the premise of this show, which is just shoot it. Because that's what you have to do. You know, if you want to tell a story, just shoot it. Like when I first started, I would fight everything I could just to get access to a DV, you know, little DVX 100 camera or a you know, mini DV anything, you know, and then just to get to 16 millimeter, just to get my hands on the tools to tell the story. And if that's your deal, if that's what you're after, you got to go for it. And you have to make no apologies. Don't take on a bunch of student debt. You're going to NYU, USC, wherever it is, that's not the answer. You want to tell a story, grab your iPhone and tell a really compelling story. And if it's just for yourself, tell that story and be satisfied with that story. Just shoot it.
Oh, nice. Do you mind if we use that in a Spotify ad?
Go ahead.
Unpaid endorsements.
I recorded a record.
Hey, there you go.
Would you be paid for it if people buy
it? No, it's like a...
I think that counts.
Don, tell us about your record. What's it called?
It's called Handmade Content.
Oh, nice.
Cool.
How would one listen to it?
Don Cherrell Music. It's totally streamable. I guess you could buy it, so maybe it's a partially paid
endorsement. But that's okay, man.
Nobody's
man.
Making any money on it. Trust me on that. It's this is
it's
so
a negative
I did a project with a great buddy of mine named George Massenberg, who invented the parametric equalizer. Great friend of mine. And I had some songs, and I said, you know, George, I'd love to like do some tunes, you know. And he's like, well, let me hear them. I played him a tune. And he goes, we got a lot of work to do. But we did it. So we recorded 11 songs and had a good time doing it. And so it's called Handmade Content. It's just for fun, but it was a great time, and I'm very proud of it.
Okay, Matt, you got anything to endorse?
New show on HBO, Los Spookies. You guys know the show?
No.
It's the new Fred Armisen show.
I love Fred Armisen.
It's all in Spanish, and it is about this group of... like young goth kids in Mexico who get hired to like do spooky shit for people. So in the pilot episode, a priest is like, oh man, this young priest is like getting all the attention. So I need an exorcism. Can you guys whip up a possession for me so I can exorcise someone? And then they like do like kind of like a kind of lo-fi possession so that he can perform an exorcism. But they're like just like goth kids who are into spooky shit. And it's super charming and like funny and weird and great.
And there's subtitles?
Yeah.
Just because I'm working on a couple pitches right now with my writing partner. We're kind of trying to break this story, and I think we're pretty close. But I was talking to another writer friend of mine, and he said like whenever he's just like trying to figure out his story, he just casts the movie or the show or whatever.
That's fun. Yeah.
Just goes to IMDb or watches movies, watches shows, and like, oh, that person's got a cool look. And then he'll just put a picture of them up on the wall, like while he's like figuring out the story. And it just like gives them ideas like, oh, I can picture this guy and this girl doing this thing or whatever. Right. And so today we started like kind of casting.
Is there anyone you want to that you cast that you could talk about?
Like fake cast?
Yeah. Fake cast.
I just find myself explaining her like why I like certain characters like Hugh Jackman in Prisoners. You know that movie? Mm-hmm. We have a character that's kind of like that, like this kind of lone wolf type character. And so just kind of, and then there's, do you know Lee Pace? He was like the super lovable guy in Pushing Daisies. He's like the main like kind of boyish boy, but then he's the main guy in Halt and Catch Fire. It's like him and Scoot McNairy are like the two guys that are starting the company together. So yeah, those are some names that we were looking at.
So it's kind of all over the place, but it could just be like Bruce Willis would be helpful for you just as a process.
Yeah,
right?
Like a Bruce Willis type. I think it's better to go a little less
movie star
cliche, I guess. I don't know. Like we talk about like the girl from Eighth Grade as being like our main character.
I guess what I'm trying to say is just like whatever helps you write the character a little bit more clearly.
Yeah, but also I guess with an eye for like making more interesting decisions as opposed to like more obvious decisions.
You got a problem with Bruce Willis?
I think Bruce Willis is like so like people associate so many things with him that it's like hard to like imagine. Fair but enough. But I think someone like
Demi Moore.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but I mean, like
he's never gonna get out of her shadow.
Yeah, sure. <Exactly. laughs>
Yeah. How could he?
Or Ashton's at that point. Where can listeners find out more about you? Say they like, do you tweet? Are you on Instagram? What's your deal? You got a website? You got a company website?
DCP Productions.
Really?
Yeah. Oddly enough, they don't do DCPs.
Yeah, that is confusing.
Why?
DCP, what does it stand for? It's like a
digital cinema projection file or something?
That's like the file you need if you want to put a movie in the theater.
This is an interesting story. The P is for professional. So it's Don Sherrell Professional Productions is what DCP stands for.
Well,
there it is. That coming is like from the guy in a bandana, fishing shirt, and a bathing suit.
That is such a good.
This is my fanciest bathing suit, by the way. I was leaving morning, and my wife goes, "Did you pack like pants?" I go, "No."
You're like, this is LA, baby.
Yeah.
DCPproductions.net.
Well, if you want to find out more about the podcast and this interview and all the stuff we talked about, go to justshootitpodcast.com. You can also email us your questions, comments, thoughts, opinions on fart sounds at justshootitpod@gmail.com.
You can find us across all social media at justshootitpod. Me at Mr. Matt
and
Lowe.
And I'm at Smitey Pyleg on Twitter and at O Kaplan on Instagram. Our producer is Madeline Rosebot. Our editor is Jay McAuliffe. And our webmaster is Ewan Williams. Rate us on iTunes if you get a chance. And thanks for listening. And the music you're listening to right now is from the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. And we will catch you next time.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.